My name is Paul Toppins. I'm a lawyer in Alabama, and I've volunteered to talk about the WikiLeaks. I don't know how to describe it, whether it's a phenomena or news item. Probably news item is more appropriate. Although my daughter would probably have more respect if I was talking about the Harry Potter fan fiction. And I probably, quite frankly, we might feel a little more comfortable talking about the Harry Potter fan fiction. In looking at this, it's amazing what all the strange turns and weird things about WikiLeaks. If we were doing screenplay analysis and you came in and gave all the WikiLeaks details, somebody would say, no, people just aren't going to buy that. It's just too strange. But in any event, what is WikiLeaks? For those who don't know, it is, as they define it themselves, basically a source or a spot, a resource to release sensitive material. They are run out of BitTorrent servers based right now in Sweden, although they claim to be mirrored in a myriad number of places around the world. Their claim is, I won't use their words, they're an uncensorable system for untraceable mass document leaking. this is their language too. I just liked that they talk about the comfortable presentation style of Wikipedia. That gives you an idea of the mindset, I guess, of the people behind this, and maybe just the person behind this, which we'll get to in a second. It's another thing they call themselves, the first intelligence agency of the people. Started in 2007. Their website said that they were a group of Chinese dissidents and some others, but the suspicion, on my part at least, is it's one guy who's got some friends. But you know, that's maybe neither here nor there, but you'll see him in a moment. What I want to do for a minute is to go back and give you a little bit of background. This is Daniel Ellsberg, and I'm looking for the gray hair in the room, someone raised a hand. I was a teenager when the Pentagon Papers were first published during the Vietnam War. Daniel Ellsberg was an analyst for the RAND Corporation. And the RAND Corporation is one of those think tanks that makes a bunch of money working primarily for the government. I think 76-77% of their business at the time was for the government. And Ellsberg, sort of interesting guy. He's Jewish by birth is the way his parents would describe it, but he's they became Christian Scientists, so he was raised Christian Scientist. He joined the Marines, was a company commander I'm not sure where it was. It was prior to Vietnam, company commander in the 50s. I don't know that he went to Korea or not. It may have been after the conflict there had been settled, but he was a company commander. He went to work for RAND after he got his first of his couple of degrees from Harvard. He had a master's in economics, and he eventually got a doctorate in economics. And it was the economics of how people make decisions. It studied not the dollars and cents kind of economics that I'd think of, but how people decide to do things. That was what his fascination was. And he went to work for RAND, studying the military. Specifically, his expertise was in nuclear weapons. And at some point, he went to work for a couple of years at the Pentagon, basically on the same thing, for an aide, the chief aide to the Secretary of Defense. He was like the aide to the aide. And he saw all sorts of classified material and all sorts of things that came through. He was at the Pentagon when some things happened in Vietnam that led to an escalation of the war. Led to the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, for those who are into Vietnam history. But basically, what he began to see was the things that were coming in over his desk didn't match up with the things that the public was being told and the things that the lawmakers were being told, that Congress was being told. And so there was this disparity that began to bother him a little bit. He also began to discover that the authority to launch a nuclear strike attack was a lot broader than the public had been told. There are a lot of people who, as he put it in his autobiography, had their hands on the triggers, you know, had the fingers on the buttons. Anyway, Ellsberg is troubled by all this. He goes back to work for the Rand Corporation, still doing military things, and one of the things that he works on or has access to, and he says that he's one of the few people that actually read the whole thing, is the McNamara study of Vietnam, of the early days in Vietnam. And that document, wait a minute, was 47 volumes long. And so he began to decide, you know, this needs to get out, because the things that are in this document aren't things that people know about. And he began, the real impetus for this, according to him, was he saw the decision makers in the government making the same mistakes over again. They were doing the same thing again. So he started sneaking out, you know, the Vietnam War had begun during Kennedy's administration. Lyndon Johnson became president. He escalated it somewhat. Richard Nixon ran in 68, basically on I can end the war. It's all politicians do when they have a war going on, and it's beginning to get unpopular. But Ellsberg was not convinced that Nixon wasn't making the same mistakes that Johnson made and possibly Kennedy made in the past. So he began sneaking out these 47 volumes every night from his office in October of 1969 was when he began. He'd go to a friend's, had a little ad agency, and they'd use their old Xerox copier. And once again, like I said, there's not a lot of gray hair, so y'all don't have the misery of the old Xerox copiers, but they'd go, it's like a scanner, a really bad, cheap scanner, one page. Do the same thing over and over. So he'd stay up all night long for weeks at a time copying these pages. He'd have friends come with him. The police several times came to the offices because they couldn't figure out the people that were doing the copying, couldn't figure out how to turn the alarm off correctly. And so they'd rap on the windows, and they had all these top secret documents labeled top secret at top and bottom. Ellsberg decided, you know, that really is not a good idea. Some of them might look over here and see something that says top secret and start asking questions. So he started clipping the tops and the bottoms off of the pages that he had, which added tremendously to the time it took to copy this stuff, until somebody figured out you could paste something over the copy machine or the, you know, and feed the put the pages in, because they had to put the pages in singly. They didn't feed, you know, it was a nightmare. And the reason I'm going to that detail about that is we'll see how easy it is in a minute for WikiLeaks to get what they got just a little while ago. Okay, the Vietnam War is going on. I got, you know, got a few pictures off of Google Images. You know, it's causing a lot of protest. It's becoming very divisive. He decides that he needs to go and tell Congress about this. So he starts taking these documents, and he's expecting to be arrested any moment now, because he's been taking them out of the Rand Corporation at night, going and copying all night, and then bringing them back in the morning, dog tired. And as he begins talking to government officials, he's sure the word's gonna leak out that he's responsible and come get him. So he takes these 7,000 pages that he eventually copied, and he starts keeping them in friends' house. And he thinks, you know, I need copies. So he wants to take them to a copy shop to get more pages made, but they discover there's some of the pages that still have top secret. I mean, it just sounds like a nightmare ordeal to try to get 7,000 pages of this document in multiple copies. Goes on for a while, let's see, until Congress, he talks to Nixon's people, talks to Henry Kissinger, who may have been in the National Security Advisor at the time, wasn't necessarily the Secretary of State, and says, look, you're making mistakes, let me explain to you what, I've read these 47 volumes, I know what the history is, let me help you. And they sort of blow him off. A lot of Congress blows him off. He finally decides, you know, there's no way, and the war begins escalating. Now, he started copying in 69. This is in 71 when he finally decides, I've got to go public with these things. Of course, it's going to put me in prison. I know that, because it's leaking, it's violating the Espionage Act, or so he thinks. So he goes public with the documents by giving them to the New York Times. And the New York Times starts analyzing him and spends, I don't know how long they did, but they had maybe 3 months, something like that. And then they began running stories in June of 1971. The government tells them, stop publishing. And they say, no, we're going to keep publishing. They go and they get a court in D.C. to enjoin the publication of any more stories about the Pentagon, about these Pentagon Papers, the McNamara Report on Vietnam, which is a prior restraint in legal terms. Prior restraints under the First Amendment, at least probably up until recently, have been something that's very, very, very hard for the government to get. The government tried to do so when the Nation magazine published How to Build a Nuclear Bomb years and years ago. And I can't remember the outcome of that, but I think that they ultimately the Nation published it, somebody else published it, and you know the, went away. Goes up through the courts. Ellsberg says, I can't have, you know, I've had two stories come out of the New York Times. I can't let this stop now after all this effort. He takes the page copy to the Washington Post. The Washington Post begins publishing it. It may have been a judge in New York that's then joined him. They try to get a judge in D.C. to enjoin, and the judge says no. So you've got the Washington Post publishing all these papers, and the New York Times stay it down here for having to follow the injunction. It goes to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court decides the government has not met its really high burden in justifying a prior restraint, which it is a violation of the First Amendment. Congress shall pass no law abridging freedom of speech, freedom of the press. They allow the New York Times to begin publishing the papers again. All of the justices voted for that. It was a unanimous decision, but they all wrote their own opinions. So you got 9 separate opinions. You can read them if you'd like. It's a short opinion, about 20 pages long. They say you can publish it. Okay, documents are being published. One thing that Ellsberg really, really wanted to have happen was not for the newspapers to run excerpts of the documents. He wanted the whole thing out there so everybody could see it. And I can vividly remember after the Supreme Court ruled, both the New York Times and the Washington Post rushed out these big, fat paperback books of the Pentagon Papers. You know, you see them in drugstores and supermarkets, see them everywhere. I don't know if anybody, people did actually read them, but I didn't read them. I think my father bought one, but, you know, may have just glanced through it. They're a bunch of reports and boring things. But he achieved his purpose, at least, he thought, of getting the information out there. What effect did it have on the war? Well, it probably had very minimal effect. It galvanized the opponents to the Vietnam War, but it didn't really change the policy. In fact, in some ways, the policy escalated. Richard Nixon was reelected, George McGovern was defeated, and after the reelection in December 1972, Nixon started the Christmas bombing of Hanoi, or North Vietnam, and the war began escalating more. So Ellsberg, who has been arrested and charged with eight or nine felonies, awaiting trial, figures, you know, somewhat in vain, all of his efforts. Nixon was very concerned about trying to discredit Ellsberg, and he got... he told his of his aides, we need to find things on him, we need to find all the dirt we can. And the aides hired some folks, and they broke into his psychiatrist's office in California and got some of his files. Well, this little group of people who did this were known informally, I guess, at the White House as the Plumbers. Well, the Plumbers decided... they got this stuff on Ellsberg, and they decided, or Nixon or somebody decided, Haldeman, somebody up the chain decided, we need to keep tabs on the Democrats, too. We need to keep tabs on McGovern's campaign. And so they sent this group of, actually, they were Cuban nationals, I believe, and G. Gordon Liddy of now radio fame, right-wing radio fame, Howard Hunt of former CIA employee who wrote spy novels. And they broke into the Watergate Hotel, you know. So even those that don't have gray hair have surely heard of Watergate. So by overreacting, in a sense, to this, because the release of the Pentagon Papers didn't really change the minds of the voters, at least, because Nixon was reelected. It didn't have the effect that Ellsberg may have intended, or the politicians who were supporting him intended. What it did was it led to the impeachment of Richard Nixon and the downfall of a presidency, ultimately resulting in Nixon's resignation. A few years later, the fall of Saigon in 75, I believe. Vietnam War continued, almost 60,000 American soldiers or men and women killed, over 300,000 injured, millions of Vietnamese dead and injured, and the country fell and you know, is now one country under the North. Gerald Ford, like I said, became president, which led to Jimmy Carter, which you could look upon that as, you know, Georgia peanut farmer probably wouldn't have been elected president if all of that things hadn't happened. Anyway, I begin that as sort of a preface for WikiLeaks, because what is WikiLeaks' opinion about Daniel Ellsberg? Ellsberg, they have great respect for it, or at least their spokesman does, but they say that Ellsberg got it wrong. He did it wrong, and that's what they are here to fix. Okay, now, excuse me a minute. I couldn't get this to work on my laptop, my netbook, last night. It played it for every slide, and I didn't know you didn't want to hear it. But to me, this is the music that plays in WikiLeaks today. Well, if it will play, there you go. Having that play every slide would have been a good thing. It might pep it up a little bit. That, of course, is Lady Gaga. Now, to me, when I started looking at the WikiLeaks thing, it became the absurd part of it. That just was, you know, just underlined it. You know, what does Lady Gaga have to do with WikiLeaks? Well, the latest thing that WikiLeaks has released, these 77,000 pages of government documents from the Afghan war, most of which I think are secret, not top secret, but they came allegedly from a private, Brad Manning, who was stationed in Afghanistan. And the way Brad Manning supposedly or allegedly got the information was on the government computers that he worked, because he ran through all this classified stuff and, you know, went through his hands. They block the USB ports, so you can't take your USB drive and, you know, stick it in there and walk off with stuff. But they didn't block the CDR, the CD-ROM drives. I've had, you know, old technology, you know, they're not worried about that. I've had that experience. I have a client that they block you from using your USB ports, and they block you from logging on to various websites, like you can't get on Yahoo, check your mail. But sometimes I've had to copy documents off their system. Well, they don't block Comcast. So I just email the document, say, excuse me, can I borrow your computer? And I sit down and I email the document to myself right out the door. You know, it's hard to totally shut it down if it has any outside connection or any connection to anything other than just a monitor. Well, anyway, Brad Manning allegedly told somebody, another hacker, he bragged to him online or in an email, hey, I got all these documents or all this information, and I sent it to WikiLeaks, and I did it by this. I'd take in my CD, I'd pop it in the machine, put my headphones on, and I would start singing to Lady Gaga. Meanwhile, the CD that's running in there doesn't have Lady Gaga on it. It's blank, or he's writing over it, and he's copying to his CD, copying from his CD-ROM. And that's how he supposedly walked out with 77,000 pages of documents, and the other big recent notable thing, I guess, that WikiLeaks has done, which is the what they call collateral murder, which I had up here initially the web page for it, the video from an Apache attack helicopter in Vietnam. God, I'm sorry, I'm still stuck on that. See, I'm a product of the 70s. In Baghdad, in New Baghdad, shooting 13 or 14 men on the street, including two Reuters news employees, because they thought they were armed. That video, well, actually I have a couple of stills from it, but not graphic stills, is just horrendous to watch. It has the audio, it has the transcript of the pilots talking about the men, who they say that they thought they had weapons. I mean, you know, give the pilots the benefit of the doubt, they thought they had weapons. One of them, I think, was, and they may have had a weapon. Of course, as people will say in Iraq, everybody has an AK-47. It's not that unusual. But now they all have AK-47s. But one of them may have been holding a tripod for a camera that they mistook for some kind of weapon. Okay, back to WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks, I said, started in 2007. They've released a bunch of documents, a bunch of things. People will send it to them, and what they do is they have a system they claim set up to allow you to send it to them anonymously through this, so Tor servers, BitTorrent servers. And I've never used BitTorrent. I don't know quite how it all works, but I understand the concept where the files are housed on different computers in different places, and BitTorrent basically just tells you where to go look, and you go get it, and it's a peer-to-peer. Okay, peer-to-peer network where one computer connects to another computer, it connects to another computer. It's very hard to trace, or I suppose it is. I don't know. NSA may disagree, but... So they have it all in these BitTorrent servers, and they get a bunch of stuff sent to them, and they just publish it. Now, they've been criticized by the Federation of American Scientists, which is a big group in favor of disclosure of details of secret things, as following a conveyor belt approach to release of documents. They just sort of churn it out there. The documents they released about Afghanistan, the government said, this government spokesman, the Secretary of Defense, and others have said the WikiLeaks has blood on their hands because they've released this information, they haven't taken the names out in the proper places, and all this does is gives the Taliban information about who they need to go kill, which may or not be true. I actually haven't read any of the documents. But WikiLeaks' response was, okay, we're getting set to release some more documents. How about we send them to you and you tell us what names to take out? Which is another one of those absurd things, you know. I have broken into your house and I've stolen something. Would you tell me if it's valuable or not? You know, it's. I don't understand the analogy, but that's it. WikiLeaks has also released. Text messages from 9/11, people that were killed in the towers. You know, I don't know about that. I don't know what that proves or shows. They've done things on African corruption that they claim helped swing an election in one state. I can't remember if it was Kenya or... I can't remember. I'm sorry. But they've also released information... I just like this picture. Yeah. About Sarah Palin's Yahoo account when she was governor of Alaska. Now... This was during the election, and somebody got a hold of her Yahoo account. They figured out the password. You know, they could do the challenge questions. Obviously, see your password has changed. You know, or if you remember a few members ago, Paris Hilton got her T-Mobile Sidekick emails and text messages read because somebody figured out, you know, they have challenge questions. You can't remember your password. What's your, what's the name of your pet? And they knew Sarah, Paris Hilton's pet dog's name, so they were able to put it down, and well, lo and behold, they got a new password set. Well, obviously somebody did that to Sarah Palin, too. But WikiLeaks posted this photograph that was in her files. This is her Bristol and her baby brother, I guess, or maybe her child. I don't understand the societal benefit of showing a cross-eyed Sarah Palin daughter photo, you know, releasing it. I just, you know, that's me, I guess. Okay. Who runs WikiLeaks? Well, who is WikiLeaks? He's an Australian. Now, when I think of Australian men, you know, we've been given an image of a, Yeah, the certain. Well, wait a minute. Now this is for more recent years. If you're older like me, you might think of Paul Hogan, but instead, the voice of WikiLeaks, the driving force behind WikiLeaks, perhaps WikiLeaks in almost its entirety, is this guy, Julian Assange. He was from Australia. He had a strange childhood. He's a hacker. He was a hacker. He pled guilty to hacking some government computers and corporate computers in Australia and paid a equivalent of a $2,100 fine, I think, as a kid. Had a son when he was 18 or 19. Got divorced. Went to work at various places and sort of settled in on WikiLeaks several years ago, and now supposedly lives out of a backpack and travels from place to place and never, you know, sort of like Saddam Hussein would do before the war when they were hunting him. You know, he was afraid they're going to blow up his house. Well, that's the way this guy lives. A little bit less dorky picture of Assange. I don't know if you've ever heard him talk, but he is one of the most boring people in the world to listen to. He's just no range. He's just deadpan. It's almost painful to hear him. I'd much rather read him, I suppose. But he's said, oh, WikiLeaks is all these people, and you know, and but in interviews they've said, well, who has the final word or who makes the decision about what? He said, well, I guess I do. So, you know, there's a strong suspicion that Assange is the big part of WikiLeaks. So accordingly, he's a little concerned about being arrested, having third-party rendition happen to him, being transported to some country. And so he moves around and he doesn't appear in places. They go to Belgium because Belgium has laws that make it difficult to record telephone conversations. WikiLeaks computers, their main computers, are based out of Sweden because Sweden has laws that protect them. And this is another interesting thing that if it was in a screenplay, people would go, you know, you're not going to believe this. WikiLeaks got the government of Iceland to pass new press protection laws in order to make Iceland some sort of a press haven for leaking information. You know, you want to disclose something, you don't want to get arrested, go to Iceland, put it out there, nobody can touch it, at least in Iceland. Of course, you got to spend time in Iceland as the downside, I suppose. Anyway, that's who the voice of WikiLeaks is. Pirate Bay hosts their documents, at least initially hosts them, or initially sets them up, and the Pirate Party is backing them too. The Pirate Party is a new party in Sweden, relatively new, whose goal is the elimination of copyright laws for personal use. It's a little radical. I'm somewhat of a copyright lawyer. I went to got a master's degree in intellectual property. That's a little bit radical on the world scene. See, I can't remember what my next picture is. Okay, I can't remember what's after this. Okay, this is Collateral Murder. And I only have two shots of this. These are the guys, this is a scene from the helicopter. These are the guys walking in the streets of New Baghdad. And the helicopter, there are two Apache helicopters circling around. And they're just walking in the street. And this is seconds before the shots begin. And they have a 30 millimeter cannon on the helicopter that just... like I said, I stopped watching it when the shots started firing. I just didn't want to see snuff shots, to be honest with you. There was a reporter that got murdered from NBC News years ago, and I saw the, you know, watching the news, and there he is. He's in South America, and they say, get down on the ground, that's still with me. I don't want to see it. Some of you may have different dispositions, but it's dramatic. You can certainly go read the transcript. They have the transcript of the conversation up there among the pilots, and it's just pretty intense. This is Brad Manning. He's been arrested. He got supposedly caught. He supposedly did the collateral murder video as well as the 77,000 documents. He got caught because he was bragging to somebody, you know, over the internet, and that's why he'd never met. just somebody who had a good reputation as a hacker. The guy's, you know, he's toast. unless he wised up and didn't say a word to the when they came to interrogate him, and he's got some really good military lawyer or some other lawyer helping him, and you know they try to make something. Well, what was said to that hacker, you can't prove that was me, or even if you prove it was me, I was just, you know, it's not sworn testimony. You know, I don't know. The guy's toast. Because he's in the military, I don't know quite what the penalties would be, but I imagine they're not. He's not going to have a good result. He's not going to have a good result if he was in civilian courts either. But I sort of liken him to a little bit Jonathan Pollard, who was in prison now. Has been in prison for over a decade for releasing top secret information to Israel. And every once in a while, Israel presses to have him released because, hey, they're an ally. You know, he gave stuff to an ally. And he never has. The intelligence community just throws a fit every time. Of course, he also supposedly tried to sell the information to some other countries, too. So he's not exactly a pure case. I'm trying to think what my next point was. I'm sorry. Assange, if you may remember, another bizarre thing on this case, a little while ago, one of the Swedish prosecutors announced that they were going to arrest Assange for rape and sexual assault. The next day, they withdrew they were not told you about it in the first place. That violated our taking it back. We're pulling it back together to try to get Assange. I'd read somewhere that the woman who may have initially brought the rape charge is sort of like this incredible radical and was obsessed. Get this from a music from. We're recording, so I'm going to
get the budget. Yeah, sure. Well, anyways. I actually downloaded the. I think it was insurance.something. It's like an AES 256 file. Have they released anything is it if something happens to Assange, or I mean, like, have they released on what condition they would release the password to that?
They may have. I'm to be honest with you. I'm not 100% familiar with that. I know that they've done it from news reports, but I didn't go track it down. I would assume, since I think Assange is WikiLeaks, it's something happening to him. I mean, who else is there? WikiLeaks published on their website a list of, or maybe in a news article, these are the people on our board of directors. So they went, and the reporters went and contacted them, and a lot of them had no clue. They said, I've heard of this guy, or I've heard of this, but I didn't volunteer to be on any board of directors. You know, it's that's one of those just weird. There's just something weird about all this. Besides the fact that it was so easy, if Brad Manning did it, for him to get the information. Remember Daniel Ellsberg at a copy machine night after night after night after night, copying 7,000 pages in an old slow machine. Ellsberg's concern was getting it out to the most people that he could. When the government went after the New York Times and went after the Washington Post, he started giving other parts to other newspapers, Christian Science Monitor, LA Times, you know, other ones, to try to get it out there. And he kept telling them, I want you to publish the whole thing. I want you to publish the whole thing. Don't do excerpts. Don't do stories about it. I want everybody to have a chance to read the whole thing. And some misguided notion, I think, that people would actually do that and it would change their minds, that people would behave, you know, like he would, as an analyst would. Yes, sir.
Going along the lines of Ellsberg wanting the entire part released, one controversial part, and I'd like your thoughts on it. I understand your feeling on the video. In my enterprise security class that I teach, I made my students watch the entire video.
Mm-hmm.
The reason we made them watch the whole video was that the 18-minute video that was initially released is a very well-edited, well-processed product.
Yeah.
And yes, they released the 39 minutes of raw footage right beside it. But the bottom line is 99% of the people that watched the process piece never turn around and watched the unedited piece. Because you get to scenes like it, and no doubt it was a tragedy, but it's very well processed in the fact that you're watching the people walking around on the ground, and they insert an arrow with, this is a camera. Well, without the arrow there and someone saying what it is, I don't know what that is.
Sure.
And it just, it seems like they're going against the idea of Ellsberg and the fact that they're very much tuning this to send a message they have put together.
I would not disagree with that. I think that they obviously have an agenda, and I think that they are pretty open about their agenda. They're anti-war, and I recognize and understand that you know, civilians get killed in war. That's just inevitable in any war, and in fact, sometimes it's done deliberately. You know, Ellsberg in his book talks about how appalled he was when he learned about, as a child, learned about all the bombing that was done of cities. And it wasn't just Hitler bombing London. It was the Allies bombing Dresden and Berlin and other cities. To him, because he's so concerned with nuclear weapons, Hiroshima and Nagasaki. The problem, and I also understand that sometimes there's some things that there are secrets that we want our government to keep. You know, I wouldn't wanted Hitler to learn about the Enigma machine in London, in England, that now allowed the Allies to crack some of the codes. What it meant, though, was they learned. I think that they knew, was it the Coventry bombings? They knew of in advance that they didn't want to give an extra alert because they didn't want to give a clue to the Germans of, hey, wait, you know, they knew we were coming to this particular place. It was a trade-off that was made for the bigger good, the greater good. And those are tough things to do. But I do understand a little bit Ellsberg. You know, I'm not sure about Assange, but Ellsberg, the government needs to have some, the tendency of those in power is to keep, to not allow themselves to be open to any kind of criticism or second guessing. They don't want anybody out there putting a damper or a halt or making them raising questions on some things. And I think that needs to be done periodically. So, yes, sir.
Yeah, I mean, I want to just kind of get back touching on your discussion of with the whole, okay, you have an issue with us giving out these unredacted documents with names attached.
Right.
Well, then help us edit them, you know, and whether you think that was valid. I mean, you know, the government, before they, you know, made this offer of, okay, if you have a problem with this, help us redact it, is, you know, the DOD spokesman walked up there and basically, you know, demanded that they, you know, give forth all their information and stop doing what you exist to do, you know, despite that they're, you know, legally capable of doing this. You know, they don't have clearances, they don't have these requirements saying to not release these things. If stuff gets in their hands, it's, oh, they're able to release it. You know, I mean, the idea that, you know, they're just supposed to suddenly play along when they have, you know, an objective clearly against what the government and the war is doing, this regard, like, you know, can you just comment more on, you know, I mean, it seems like the government, knowing that these guys are working against them, you know, should be doing their best to mitigate the damage rather than just, you know, vainly hoping that they're just going to, you know, stop doing what they exist to do.
Yeah, I guess if I were in the government, it'd be a catch-22 situation. And it may be somewhat clever for them to say, hey, help us redact them. Because you're right, maybe they should, you could argue, well, you should need to mitigate, you need to try to keep, you know, if Afghan informers are getting killed because of us, you need to come in and help us out and take, you know, take the names out. But I think it's a lot of posturing too. You know, it's politics. This is political. But, you know, leaks happen all the time, and are done deliberately. Classified documents, top secret, you know, for your eyes only documents, they're all leaked all the time. You know, it's just, they got a bunch of them and they're doing it for their ends. And One other thing I just remembered about Ellsberg, he didn't get convicted. By the way, he came up for trial in 74, I believe, maybe 75. But 74. And the prosecution, as the trial was going on, said, oh, by the way, we found out that, you know, agents of the government broke into a psychiatrist's office and did this and did that and all these things they'd done wrong. And the judge said, you know, this just taints the whole thing. You can't get a fair trial or whatever. I don't know what his everything that he said. Of course, the judge had been approached by the Nixon administration to becoming the next head of the FBI, something he didn't disclose to the parties initially until it had come out in the news, I think. But he said, you know, the jury had been seated, jeopardy had attached, if you've seen Presumed Innocent, you know about that. You know, I'm dismissing the charges. Can't be charged again for this. So Ellsberg got off. Brad Manning, I don't think, is going to have as good a chance. I don't know about Assange. I mean, once classified information, he didn't steal it. He certainly made it easy to get, but it didn't steal it. Although they may have worked with Manning on how to get it. Supposedly some students from MIT did as well. That's also been in the news, that he had help to tell him how to do what he did.
I have two comments.
Yeah.
The first one is about the video in Iraq. Actually, although it's edited, but you can see from the raw video that, you know, the soldiers saying, you know, they ask for permission to engagement, and then like they say, wow, those like hammers run out of body. Like they were so happy, like, oh, they actually run out of wrong body. And they say like they shoot, like I guess a kid was killed. And they say like things like you shouldn't bring kids to the war, like it's what do you deserve, sort of like that. So I think although the video is edited, it conveyed the message that, you know, so this is, although it's war, but this thing shouldn't happen during the war. I think that's WikiLeaks' purpose. So I think although it might not seem quite objective for them to edit the message, but it's actually there. That's the first one. The second one is I'm from China, and WikiLeaks has a lot of documents about the technical details of the China's Great Firewall. Know a lot of hackers in China because they know the technical details of the Great Firewall, so they know how to attack it, how to bypass it. So maybe in this country here, in the United States, like things are more transparent, so people won't think WikiLeaks is a good thing, or I don't know your opinion, but for us, for Chinese people, I think WikiLeaks helped us a lot, I mean, to fight with government. So, yeah.
Be sure and come at 4 o'clock to the Google versus China if you have a chance.
Oh, sure, sure.
Because yeah. I'm on that panel, too. There are things in the transcript, at least. I didn't watch the video, but I read the transcript, where, you know, the pilots are saying, that guy's still moving. Okay, I got him, or something like that. You know, he's crawling on the sidewalk. But I'm old enough or something enough that I know that if you pulled out anybody in any kind of combat situation and put them, you know, in this setting in a room, and what they said at the time, it would all probably sound pretty barbaric. I mean, just because I think it is barbaric. But that's the nature of killing people.
Our job is to kill people and break things.
Yeah, that's Rush Limbaugh's quote. Yeah, I know. And in some ways it is. But there are a lot of ways it is. But still, I mean, the I guess in this country, you always hope that the military tempers whatever it does, the excesses, with some restraint. And whether this restraint was shown in that particular instance or not. There obviously have been instances, certainly in the news, where people have been killed who didn't have anything to do with anything and covered up. You know, but that happens in every war and every side, some sides more than other, but, you know. War is hell, as Sherman said.
I'm home.
Yeah.
I'm on. Okay. Sorry. I'm all for radical transparency of government secrets, but WikiLeaks' release of this information may potentially complicate further release of state secrets. Can you comment a little bit on the fact that releasing this information may increase the level of security surrounding documents?
Yeah. I assume that the CD drives are no longer in those machines or have been glued shut. I don't know if in long term, I think it temporarily will inhibit some ways of getting stuff. You do it once and they'll close that door. But there is inherent in humans. Oops. No, Google, I don't want you to install again. Sorry. Shut up. Stop it. Inherent disagreements about things going on and wanting to bring some publicity to it. Oftentimes it's politicians for their own end, you know. So if they can't get it on CD, but there's a printer they could attach, or they could do a screenshot, or who knows, you know, they could get it some way. I suspect we'll still be getting leaks of some fashion. I mean, it's easier today to get massive amounts of documents, as obviously as WikiLeaks has shown, because if it's digital and it can, you know, it can be stored, and you know, this is a hard drive. You know, your phone now can be just plugged into your computer and zip, take things off. People carry their phones with them everywhere. So I don't know. I'm sure that temporarily they'll shut some stuff down. But the commander said, or the defense department says, look, we want this information to be out there for our guys, or for our soldiers. They need to have, you know, these operational memos that went back and forth. And like I said, WikiLeaks, the things they released, I have read it, were secret at best. The government has said, oh, the only thing they released was that the Afghans were using a certain kind of shoulder-launched missile that could hit our helicopters. Well, that was news? I mean, they made it sound like that was news. To me, I just assumed they were. I mean, that's how we helped decimate the Soviets when they were in Afghanistan, was giving them all those Stinger missiles. I assume some were still staying around in some caves somewhere. But they acted like, oh, we didn't really think they had that capability, you know? Yeah, right. You guys aren't really thinking ahead. Yeah.
You mentioned earlier about someone high up in WikiLeaks going down for rape and molestation charge.
Yes, Julian Assange.
Do you think that would be something related to like a scare tactic, or possibly even something related to the media to make WikiLeaks bigger or more popular?
Oh, you think it might have been a plant by him? It was so strange. I don't know that I would attribute it to anybody. I think it was just one of those weird things that WikiLeaks, I'm afraid, is going to be like a magnet and just attract odd things, because it's just odd. He's odd. You know, the whole thing is a little odd. You know, they're running on Pirate Bay's servers. Well, you know, what is Pirate Bay, you know, known for? Well, it's for violating, copyrights, allowing people to copy and download things like Lady Gaga. Oops. Oh, well, there it goes. I don't know. Anything is possible, and I wouldn't put it past them, because I think Assange has, you know, he was there was a book that was written about him by a friend of his, about this hacking group that they were in, but it was a fictional book. But there was this character, it was sort of like a superhero, that, you know, and I can't remember the guy's name. I'm sorry, I just blanked out of my mind. But Assange has been quoted to say, yeah, that character was based on me.
Quick comment.
Yeah.
I was thinking about the redacted thing, and I remember hearing some people in the news media, specifically NPR, talking about how a lot of news organizations that are releasing leaked documents will go and talk to the government specifically, okay, so we have these documents, but it's got some names in it. Should we not release things? And I heard that specifically in this case, with the Afghanistan documents, WikiLeaks held back a lot of the documents because they contained a lot of sensitive information, but were still being criticized for releasing them because some of the information had names of mm-hmm. people who were related to people who were informants, and so or some specific information that could be used to track them down if they were really, really gung-ho about it, but I suppose the Taliban are, but I don't know how good they are at information analysis, but at any rate, it seemed like just a typical tactic that news organizations do to at least get some of the curse off of releasing large amounts of leaked documents. So I was just wanted to put that out there.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I understand that. WikiLeaks supposedly released some documents last week. I haven't been able to find them. I may have just missed it in crush of other things. But they're releasing some more. And obviously that big file that's out there, the insurance file, has got something in it. Maybe not. Maybe it's Lady Gaga videos or something that have been encrypted. Well, the suspicion is they've given the password to that file to the government so that it could look and see what's there as sort of, this is what we got on you. You sure you want to do anything to us? Otherwise, it's a bluff and you don't know. But that's another one of those weird things. You just don't know what the deal is.
That would be a bad idea because then the government could release it and their insurance would just...
Yeah, except if it's that horrible, if it's, about the aliens in Nevada that are, one thing that you wonder about, and WikiLeaks themselves say this on their website, they have a disclaimer that says, we are not a CIA front. But you wonder, they put out this stuff, it's available on the internet, big file, so, you could... It takes a while to transmit it, I guess. It takes a second or two longer. You can see it, track its passage. You wonder if, it's leading them to, somebody in Afghanistan. It's leading them. Anybody that downloaded this file in the, the border between Pakistan and, trace, I don't know. That's something for the NSA. But yes.
Three quick follow-ups. First, okay. A lot of people who have looked at the insurance file, just at the sheer size of it, either say it's a bluff or it's got to be some kind of media because it's probably too big to be documents.
1.4 gigs.
Yeah, it's pretty big.
Okay.
Second, on the idea that it's a front, they openly claim they do not know the source of their documents. There's nothing that would keep the government from submitting documents to them. The third, going back to the discussion earlier, I mean, his stated purpose in the TED Talk that he gave on video several weeks ago, the line exists there, our purpose is to change the opinions of the people paying the bills, us. I have no problem with advocacy groups, but if you go back to the first three slides or so you had on there, it had the mm-hmm. stated purposes of WikiLeaks. Do you think they're trying to have it both ways in terms of being an advocacy group and trying to say they're neutral?
I think that I would not call them neutral because he said things about, to me I interpret as being advocates and or advocacy. I think I look upon them as sort of TMZ in some ways. Also, if they get something really juicy, they're going to release it. Like Sarah Palin stuff. I just don't know what that had to do with. I guess it was to show she used a private email account and did government business. And Todd got involved. I don't know, but yes.
That's you. So basically, we just have one set of conspiracy theorists against another set of conspiracy theorists.
I'm not sure the government is to get its act together enough, at least not this administration, to deliberately send documents in order to do something. Although there are leaks all the time, though, to support a policy of, like, withdrawal from Iraq. I'm sure there are leaks, things leaked to help bolster the case of we need to withdraw we missed the boat in Afghanistan or whatever the particular thing they're going for right now. Yeah, I'm sorry, the lady in the...
Well, it's interesting. Here, get her. Public, and there is, thank you. There's another guy out there, he's up in New York, John Young, up at cryptome.org,
yeah,
has most of the same material, but he just stays in his apartment and he does the stuff, and he doesn't try to get himself on the news, except when he is on the news. But he's got most of the same material that WikiLeaks does, and more material, and of course he and Aftergood at FAS are always, you know, sniping at one another about whether the stuff should be released or not.
Yeah.
But he's more of a stated, I want the material out there, and the material's out there, okay, fine, move on. Whereas Assange is, you know, he's a character in a book.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the guy you're talking about, Young, has said WikiLeaks is a fraud.
Oh, yeah.
They're just frauds. They're more into publicity than anything. And I don't discount that Assange, I think, is into publicity, but he's so boring.
Oh, we got more time. Cool.
It goes all the way to 11:30? What? Yeah.
Okay, grill him mercilessly.
Okay. So, you know, I mean, obviously WikiLeaks it's a pretty new organization. What, 2007 you said founded? I mean, it's immature. You know, we're seeing, you know, a mixture of, you know, both true advocacy work with, like, the Khaled al-Murda release to just, you know, BS, like the Sarah Palin thing is not you serving a purpose. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, this leads to skepticism either way. Do you think, though, that, I mean, with the stated goal of, you know, secrecy for its own sake does not have merit. Do we have secrecy to protect government interests, or do we have secrecy to prevent government embarrassment? You know, can WikiLeaks, do you think it has a good potential to evolve into something where it is a stronger advocate? I mean, I think with these attempts to reach out to the government saying, okay, you're calling these things irresponsible, help us do this more responsibly, it seems like they're getting savvier about ways of doing this that will be more effective towards their goals, but then also being responsible in terms of, you know, advocating their goals, getting information to the public in issues where our government isn't necessarily working in our interest through secrecy.
Yeah, I'm sure time will tell whether they last and they evolve in any way. Trying to avoid embarrassing government versus trying to avoid disclosing secrets that could cause harm that nobody would want or few people would want. Few people would advocate. You know, killing of some Afghans who help out the military. I don't know. You know, interpreters or things like that. I don't know if that's supported by anybody. But I don't know. My suspicion is WikiLeaks may be they may have hit their peak, you know. But I don't know. They claim they've got this great system so they can get all this stuff and not, you can give it to them safely. But I'd be worried about transmitting anything to WikiLeaks.
I'm sorry I came in a bit late, so I'm sorry if you went over this already, but I was wondering what you saw as the greater risk to WikiLeaks' credibility in the future, because it seems at the very least they're being talked about enough to seem like a legitimate organization. So do you think it would be a greater risk that, for example, with the war diaries, that they could trace the Afghans that were killed because of the release of the war diaries, sort of with a truthful leak? Or do you think it's more dangerous for them that they would be co-opted by some sort of political organization and release something false to WikiLeaks, and then they tried to play that off as true?
That's a good idea, actually. I mean, I'm sure somebody's thinking about, well, if they're going to release something, we'll give it something we can demonstrably prove is false. Of course, you know, in our world, nobody believes anything. So even if you prove it everybody believes everything. You prove it, there's still going to be people that don't. So you run a risk of, you create something out there, you create the own lie that comes back and bites you. So I don't know. I think that I don't know that they're, if say Afghans get killed you can try to trace it back, I'm sure there will be efforts to do that. But I have the bigger issue I've got is, I'm not sure people care enough. you know, the difference are, can you imagine what the big difference, in my mind at least, the difference between the Vietnam War protests and any protests about the Afghan War or the Iraqi War? It's a big difference. Just one big thing missing from now that was present back then.
No draft.
So if you're not going to be the one that's sent over there, some volunteer, some kid that, you know, maybe it's a friend, maybe you know him, but, or some kid's friend or something like that, or some child of a friend. But if it's not you, it tones the temperature down a lot. So they've released all the, of course, Ellsberg didn't feel like he'd succeeded. And WikiLeaks, Assange didn't think Ellsberg succeeded. Yes, sir.
Going to your comment right just a moment ago, I think one of the bigger credibility risks for WikiLeaks would be the what-if scenario of what if documents were leaked to WikiLeaks that ran contrary to the narrative they're trying to write. Would they release those documents? If yes, maybe they keep their credibility. If no, that's a good question.
Well, they did do something. What was it? Dang. Something that I read about that they had released, and I thought, well, that really is contrary to what I think of WikiLeaks. But I can't remember what it was. It wasn't a big thing, but still, it was a little thing that I thought that was critical of something that. Wait. I know what it was. It was the ClimateGate emails. Certainly the talk radio has been over this a lot, but there was some professors in East Anglia or some scientists in Britain who sent these emails back and forth that basically, if you read them a certain way, you could say they were saying that they had pumped up global warming or climate change figures, or they'd adjusted them to fix a problem to make it consistent with the narrative that there's, you know, a global warming issue. And WikiLeaks published them, and it caused a great furor. It's not about war, but you'd think that WikiLeaks, you know, you're viewing them stereotypically, you'd think they're anti-war, they're going to be pro climate change as a problem. But, you know, that it's not quite it's a little apples and oranges, not quite identical. If they came up with some pro-war document of some sort.
Since WikiLeaks is such a multinational thing, and because Assange is Australian, even if all sorts of countries were very angry at what it's doing, who or what could hold him or the organization to account?
Well, that's a problem that's a product of the internet age. I don't know that you can hold them to account as long as there are countries that are willing to give them, you know, sanction. Or sanctuary. But it means that Assange has to keep looking over his shoulder, at least. I doubt he could ever come to this country, not in the near future, at least. So I don't think that you can. You know, Iceland, like I said, they got the laws changed to basically make Iceland, this, to the rest of the world's thinking, an outlaw nation that's willing to support any kind of disclosures. Iceland looks upon it as a revenue enhancer. They look upon it as, you know, they're going to be like the tourist spot for journalists seeking to disclose things. Stretch.
You just spoke about the ramifications legally. What do you think the ramification might be on an individual level? Like, if someone individually has a beef with this person, do you think that he's under personal threat, not just legal or governmental threat?
Well, it's somewhat removed, I guess. Bless you. I would be worried if I were him. I would not be comfortable. Maybe that's why he's so boring. He's uncomfortable all the time. But I think his I'd be more worried if I were him about governmental threat. If in fact they had something that, or they were afraid they were going to get something that really was going to be a big issue. I mean, Ellsberg, just to discredit him, got Nixon to do all the things that he did, or started him on the path of doing all the things that he did. And they were already, the stuff's already out there. The RAND scientists had already written letters to the editors, several of them saying, we work at RAND Corporation and we think that, you know, the policy in Vietnam needs to be changed. You know, they'd been lobbying, they'd been publicly lobbying, they just hadn't released the documents. Had threatened to release them or anything like that, but they, you know, yes, sir.
One thing to remember, he released the collateral murder video at a National Press Club event in Washington. He's, to my knowledge, he's never held security clearance. He didn't steal the documents off of a government computer server. You have to stretch to think of what he could be jailed for. In terms of personal liability, more likely, if someone in a country with hard libel laws like England were to bring a civil suit against him, they could get a judgment, but at the same time, he travels all the time and has no significant assets that anyone knows of. So he's pretty lawsuit-proof.
You know, one thing that the internet age has brought about, you mentioned England. England has its Official Secrets Act, and it also has not exactly privacy laws, but you can't disclose the name of all sorts of people in litigation, in criminal litigation and other things like that. So the English papers can't publish the names that everybody else in the world knows, and that the English people can get over the internet. It makes you wonder, can they really have those kind of laws available anywhere that stand up, that last? But as far as Assange's crimes, I don't know. I haven't looked at the espionage statutes. The fact of getting something that you know is secret and then disclosing it probably violates a law. I'd be surprised if it didn't. Yeah.
Hello, yes. I'm a bit late, but I'm wondering how you think the Swedish parliamentary elections taking place in a week or two, and the Swedish Pirate Party is now hosting WikiLeaks.
Right.
And I'm not sure if you're aware, there's a parliamentary immunity for any actions committed by members of the Swedish Parliament for activities. How do you think that will play out?
It's great. I love parliamentary immunity, congressional immunity. It's as a lawyer, it's one of the best immunities there can be. You know, anything you that's done on the floor of the House or Senate, for example, in this country, or anything said, can never be questioned. Can't be brought into court. You can go in and libel people all you want. Might violate a Senate rule, I guess. But as far as the immunity, I don't know exactly what the Pirate Party is doing, other than hosting or helping. Do you have the logo? Is that,
I'm the legal director for the U.S. party.
Oh, cool. Well, do you have the logo on the back? I love their logo, the big P. Yeah, I love that. I was going to put that in the presentation. I thought that's a nice, cool updating of pirate flag.
Didn't they read the Pentagon papers into the congressional record?
Yes, they did. They did. Mike Gravel, a senator from Alaska, I think, did. And he tried to read him. He tried to read him on the floor of the Senate, and they kept raising parliamentary things to block him. He eventually read them into the. Well, obviously didn't read them, but they take them and dump them in on a committee that he headed, like Public Works Committee or something. But there was still debate about some of the documents they were going in, and what they did when the Senate was debating it. They got a copy to somebody in the House, and they put them in the record. So it's all over the congressional record. Back in 71. Sorry. Which had been hell on the Linotype operators who were doing the congressional record, because, you know, to type in 77,000 pages in one.
Okay, quick question for you. I'm not entirely familiar with the Espionage Act, and I understand that the person who does the leaking, who under security clearance can be prosecuted and possibly the publisher. What are the potential ways, or if it exists, for someone to be prosecuted or get in trouble for even possessing, say, the WikiLeaks documents that they download off of that site? Or are you aware of any theory?
I guess it's theoretically possible you could be, but I don't think it's practically possible. You know, if something that got off the internet, I don't know. I haven't read the statute, so I don't know the what all it supposedly covers. But they're gonna have enough trouble getting the ones that actually put it up there. I think that they wouldn't go after. I mean, I don't think that'd be a tough case to make, and I don't think anyone would bother wasting time trying to do it. Just possession of a document you got off the internet. It's just like public. You know, once people bought the New York Times after the Pentagon Papers, I doubt they would go after any of them.
If I can address the issue of prosecuting someone for classified documents, revealing them or possessing them or anything like that, the issue is you either have to admit the documents are classified, which it's not legal to do. So you have to declassify the documents, or you have to have a judge who's cleared, lawyers who are cleared, jurors who are cleared. Everyone involved has to be cleared for that level of information. So some schmo off the street with a secret document, that's a lot of money to try to prosecute him for really no benefit at all.
And they usually dismiss those once rather than go through the whole rigmarole of trying to deal with classified documents, often just dismiss the charges on some things like that. With things they don't want to disclose, there are more documents, they don't want to disclose them. But the defense wants to see them to prove their case that these weren't something about them, and they'll just say, well, forget it, never mind.
So do you think what the gentleman just said is the reason why they haven't gotten Assange yet, or they're just working to come up with some good legal reason to grab him? Clearly he's a person of interest.
Sure.
For quite a few governments.
Well, I think that there would be a little bit of an outcry if they snatched him up. And I don't think they want that kind of publicity.
I mean, a nightmare with no upside to it.
Yeah.
So they would only do it if they could truly cross their T's and dot their I's.
Yeah, and I don't know. I'm not even sure they'd be able to do that. I mean, I don't know how you dot the T's and cross the dot the I's and cross the T's. I think he's rightfully concerned. You know, something might happen, and you know, the even though I don't think the particular sex charges against him were it doesn't feel like they were generated by anybody in government. And I wouldn't be surprised if something else, you know, happened to discredit him in some ways. But who knows?
Having worked on the opposite side of WikiLeaks, I was a volunteer during Vietnam and also during the Cold War, and there's a fragile thing called the public trust, and you're expecting people to go fight battles for you and put their lives on the line, but to do that, they have to trust that we, the people, have their back, because if I'm going to put my butt on the line, and the person I'm working with in Afghanistan or myself could be killed because ongoing operations are leaked, we stop going and fighting for you. That's a bad thing, okay? However, on the flip side, one of the things we take an oath for is to protect the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Not that I've had to say that oath several times and know that, but the point of that is, the basis of our government is that our government is evil all the time. All governments are evil all the time and should be restricted in the amount of power that they have, and that the people have the obligation to watch them like a hawk. And when we see them doing evil, we have to say something about it and put a stop to it. That's our public obligation. At the same time, you can't violate the public trust by putting out information that's going to get people killed, especially when it isn't a demonstration of evil. Now, admittedly, the video of the civilians getting killed is an atrocity. it's really bad that happens. However, having been in the field, I also realized that it's very, very difficult to recognize the good guys from the bad guys. And you're also having to deal with doing things on a daily basis that any of us would find utterly reprehensible and, in fact, haunting for the rest of your life if you had to do them in the civilian world. And some of the reactions you see with these people in the video are the coping mechanism you do to keep from going crazy for doing things that are just unimaginable that you're called to do. We are called to go down, kill people, and break things. We're talking about a level of a hostility here that is, that guy is either going to overrun you and kill all your friends, 9/11, if you don't stop them by killing them and all their friends. It's come down to you have to kill them to stop them. They won't stop otherwise. That's the essence of war. That's why when you have a war where that's really not the motivation, which Ellsberg, that was his point. The war wasn't about that motivation. That's what he was trying to solve. Unfortunately, public opinion isn't swayed necessarily with reason. We see that today. So there's this whole giant trade-off. And so that's the thing all of us have an obligation to, is if we get information, we have to be careful about what we let loose, because on one hand, we may be protecting us from a government run amok. On the other hand, you may be killing the person next to you.
Yeah. And the thing that appalls me, I guess, about something like Vietnam is, and it made me angry when I read McNamara, Westmoreland, or somebody in later years, in their older years, saying, well, we knew at the time we really weren't going to be able to, you know, succeed, but we just couldn't back out. You know, it just politically was impossible to do that. Well, you know, that's where you'd want a little bit of courage and say, you know, I'll fall on my sword for the benefit of not having 60,000 people killed, Americans killed, not counting all the others killed. But anyway.
I'm about ready to.
Okay. Well, thank you all. Thank you.